Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
And now, our Iceman Insight segment, starring the one and only Michael Shockley. How you doing today, Michael?
I'm wonderful, especially after being the one and only. Many people are thankful that I'm the one and only.
Yeah, that's probably true. So we have, well, we start the show on a good note with the Saturday 2-1 victory against, who did we play?
we played the South Carolina Stingrays.
That's right, the Stingrays. And you, right after we talked about off air, about you put a whole sheet together so I didn't forget who we played. And here we go and start it off. But Iceman, since the last time we were on the air, they lose Wednesday. They lose Friday in Fort Wayne. They win Saturday. 7 points on the season. Dead last in the ECHL. Still some good things to... they're still doing good things.
Yeah, there's some promising things you see, especially when you look at some individuals who had been struggling that are starting to heat up. You look at Josh Beaulieu, who had 2 goals on Saturday against South Carolina. He's got 8 points in his last 7 games. Todd Robinson is starting to heat up a little bit. He's got 8 points in his last 7 games. Now, granted, he's still minus 15 on the season, and that's a problem, but at least offensively he's starting to pick it up, which will make up for all the minuses that until recently weren't being offset by offensive production. Nathan Moons looked good. He's got 7 points in 6 games since he came over from Cincinnati. And I think probably the most promising thing is that we're finally starting to see a goaltender step up and say, this is my job, don't take me out. Because Robin Dore has been really, really solid in November. He's 2-1. He's got a 168 goals against average and a 952 save percentage.
And if you did not see that spectacular show he put on in the third period Saturday night at the Ford Center, you have got to get tickets. You have got to watch this guy play.
Yeah.
He made multiple saves, blocker. I think he had a stick shaft save with 8 minutes left, and then down five. The 5-on-3 advantage goes to South Carolina. They pull the goalie 6-on-3 for over a minute, and he saved everything, just scrapping all over the net, and it was unbelievable. Great job by Chad Burley to change up. He had Beaulieu number one star with the 2 goals, and then after he faced the onslaught, he made the executive decision to make Madore the number one star, and he won the game for him.
Yeah, he absolutely deserved that. You know, the old adage in hockey is your goaltender needs to be your best penalty killer, and Madore was absolutely that on Saturday. When you go down 5-on-3 toward the end of the game, that's a daunting enough task to begin with. But then when you factor in the fact that they pull the goalie, and it's 6-on-3. So basically there's 2-on-1s all over the ice. And that's an incredible mountain to try to climb. And Madore stood tall, and it was a minute 12 that they had a 6-on-3. And to keep the puck out of the net for that long and keep the 2-1 victory, that was a big win, and it was a big crowd, 6,830 people there. It was the right time to deliver a performance like that, because if you have another big house like that and lay an egg like opening night was, then a lot of those people aren't going to come back. So that was a big, big win.
Greenville beats us last Wednesday, even though we were up, what were we up, 4-1, 3-0? Going into the
3-1.
3-1, yeah, and they had the 4 unanswered goals. And as alluded to on the Amusement Park Radio, Brian Patafi's segment, he said there was changes in the lineup because Crom needed to make changes. He said, quote, Crom is one of the nicest guys, but if you play bad, you do not want to be around him. And he made some drastic changes.
Yeah, he...
And it almost worked.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a very interesting experiment. That's what I'm calling it, because I don't know that it necessarily succeeded, but it was throw something different at the wall and see if it sticks. And after the Education Day game, Crom said in the Courier and Press, when they actually covered a game, that He told the Courier and Press that there were a few guys that just didn't perform the way they needed to be performing. Immediately on Facebook, everyone was, well, who could he be talking about? Well, we found out who he was talking about because come Wednesday's game, Dan Gender and Tyler Shalast were both out of the lineup and in were defensemen. And Crom went with 8 forwards and 8 defensemen on Wednesday. And that included having 2 defensemen play wing the entire game. Aaron Jens and Jake Overmeyer both played wing. So you've got 6 regular D. You've got 2 D playing forward. And then your 8th forward, your 8th true forward, Mark Cody, was actually the 10th forward that day. So I think that tells us a lot, too, not only about Gender and Shalast being the guys that got sat, trying to light a fire under them, but I think it also tells us a lot about Cody's role with this team in that when you only have 8 true forwards in the lineup, he's still the 10th forward not taking a regular shift. He's the guy that's going to go out, get a few shifts a game, fight when need be, inject a little energy when need be, but he's not going to be relied upon to take a regular shift. If he doesn't get a regular shift when there's only 8 forwards in the lineup, he's never going to get a regular shift.
And I don't think that's a problem. That's his role at this stage in his career, and he does it well. He also played Friday night as well before he came out of the lineup on Saturday, I believe.
Correct, yeah.
Because he got in a big fight up in Fort Wayne right after the... Was it right before... It was right... Or during the spearing incident.
Yeah, that got I think he was
Fort Wayne
in that.
Player, the game misconduct. So, but yeah, you call it an experiment. I call it discipline. And Crom, you know, Dan Gender, he was the big free agent pickup. In my opinion, he is the reason why Brian Bicek isn't on this team. I think they offered Brian Bicek money. It wasn't enough. They brought in Gender instead, who had all these great stats from the ECHL. And he, you know, everyone wants to point their finger at Crom. Everyone wants to point their finger at Todd Robinson. And I'm not saying everyone, but the people are anti-Robinson, anti-Crom. But I haven't seen any anti-Gender, and this guy got sat down for 2 games.
Right, right. And I think he's only got 2 points so far this season. And when you're brought in to be that, you know, second or third top forward of the team, you can't be producing like that. And I think... We saw a different Dan Gender on Saturday. I thought he looked a little like he had a little extra skip to his step. Now, he didn't light the scoreboard on fire or anything, but I think it was probably mission accomplished for Crom. I think the message was received loud and clear. And, you know, there's nothing – when a team is losing, you want to be out there trying to help turn things around. There's nothing a coach can do that's worse than sitting you down. And it's not just a case of sitting you down as the 10th forward. It's actually – you're watching from the press box.
Yep.
And that's – boy, that's – especially when you're a guy that talented, you want to be out there on the ice. And it only takes 1 or 2 games in the press box to realize, I need to pick my game up or I'm going to be up here again, and I don't like that.
And I don't have anything personally against Dan Gender. I'm just talking about from armchair coach, armchair GM. And the one thing I thought was interesting, too, was they put Nathan Moon on his line. They brought Moon in. He played with Robinson. He got Robinson going. Now Robinson's scoring points. And then they put Robinson with Bolio, and I can't remember, and Jens, Matt Jens, played right wing Saturday night, and they dropped Moon down to Gender. So is Gender playing that well, or is it the... Because Moon is awesome. He is a fantastic player. So now they're trying to get that line fired up.
Yeah. On Saturday, he had Moon and Mahovsky were with Gender. Yeah. And I think that was probably putting Moon with Gender was partially trying to get Gender going. But also, I think putting those two with Mahovsky was a little bit of a pat on the back, a thank you to Mahovsky, because lately we had the Robinson Beaulieu Moon line. And then the other line that's been the one line that's been consistent lately has been Dale Kennedy and Vogelhuber. They've looked really good as a second or third kind of energy line, chipping in with some offense here and there. And Crom isn't going to break that line up unless they start failing. And lately, they've been our best line on a consistent basis. So that kind of left Mahovsky as the third center being, you know, getting the scraps, so to speak. Not that the guys that he's been playing with are scrubs or anything, but when you've got 2 other lines that are set, then basically it's Mahovsky gets the other 2 guys that don't fit elsewhere. And with the D playing forward experiment, that ended up being Aaron Jens and Jake Obermeyer. And I'm sure when Mahovsky signed here in the offseason, he wasn't thinking 10 games into the season, I'm going to be playing with 2 defensemen as my wingers. So I think, in a way, you want Moon to get Gender going, but you also put those 2 with Mahovsky as a, all right, you know, experiment over. we're going to try to get you back with a couple guys that have some offensive potential, and we're going to try to get this line going now.
Vogelhuber, we got to start talking about him a little bit more. Maybe we'll do that on the next show. But he's a plus this season, and that is fantastic on a team that has such a radical scoring differential in the negative.
Yeah, that line of Dale Kennedy and Vogelhuber, I've been really impressed with them. They're not scoring a ton of goals, but they're scoring as much as they need to be in the role that they are given. And I think we've definitely seen enough out of Kennedy and Vogelhuber that they are both going to be very good players. They're not out of place at all. I particularly like Vogelhuber is not afraid at all to go into the corners and fight for pucks. And you have to have guys on a team that are willing to do that. And it's been paying off lately in the form of a couple goals.
We do continue to struggle with discipline, especially in the third period, especially with taking penalties. And I hear people complaining about the refs and everything else. And one of the things, you know, I referee in the youth league. I also play. And the one thing I tell the kids...
You play in the youth league?
No, I... yeah, did I say that wrong? I referee the youth league. I also play in the men's league. But one of the things I always tell the kids is... don't put yourself in a situation to make me make a call.
Yeah.
And I've done the opposite. You know, if you're swinging your stick around erratically, trying to get a puck, and you hit a guy's skate and he falls over, more than likely than not, the ref's going to put his hand up for a penalty. And, you know, you can argue, well, he stepped on my stick, but you're swinging your stick around and you're making that ref make a decision.
Yeah.
And we saw it. It was horrible on Saturday night. I love Blomqvist. I think he's a great, big, solid defensive defenseman. But there's 3 minutes left in the game. He's huge. He's massive, 6'7". And he puts a cross check on a guy and he doesn't even know his own strength. And he drives the guy to the ground. That forces that referee to make that call. You just can't, you can't be 6'7", 6'10 on skates, cross check a guy in the shoulders and the guy fall over in the corner and not expect to get a call.
Yeah. And then right after that on Saturday, you have the puck bounces up in the air. Tatro tries to bat it out of midair, catches a guy in the midsection with a stick. He gets called for high sticking, and that's what set up the 5-on-3 that led to the 6-on-3 with the pulled goalie at the end of the game. And guys just have to be smarter with their sticks, especially late in a game if you're protecting a lead. That's what bad teams do, is they take bad penalties when in key moments when you're trying to protect a lead or when you're a goal down and trying to come back. And that's how bad teams lose games that good teams win. Good teams don't take penalties like that. And I agree 100% with you, too, about don't put the referee in the position to make the call. You'll see guys complain, especially since the last NHL lockout, with the emphasis on interference and hooking and obstruction calls. You see guys complain about hook. Well, I didn't tug on him. Well, what was your stick doing in his midsection in the first place? You know, if you don't have that stick out where the blade is wrapped around his midsection, whether you tug on him or not, the referee is going to see that. And if you break your stride for one split second, they're going to call hooking. And if your stick isn't there in the first place, he can't call it. There's no hooking to call.
I didn't see it Wednesday night, but I think at the end of that game as well, they had gone down 4-3. And there was a play in the corner. I don't know if there was a missed call or he thought someone took exception to him, but all of a sudden he just slashed somebody.
There was also a play toward the end of that game that I've been very appreciative of the officiating this season, because I think in general it's been light years better than we saw last year. But there was a call late in that game on Wednesday on Vogelhuber that was a really, really bad call where he came down and just finished a check and they called charging on him. And you're going to have calls like that that go both ways over the course of the season. But that's the kind of stuff that with a young team, with a struggling team, those calls might not go your way as often. And it also, that's kind of what happened against Greenville with the goalie interference goal that everyone, myself included, when it first happened, thought it should have been goaltender interference. And upon video review, which the referee doesn't have the benefit of at the time, he has to make a snap judgment based on what he sees in real time. Upon video review, I kind of reversed the way I saw that play. I thought initially, yes, the guy ran into Karpovich, and it should have been A, goalie interference penalty, B, disallowed goal. But when you look at it on video, you see that there's room for doubt there. Was it 100% clean? No. But it also wasn't 100% obvious that it was a penalty and a disallowed goal. When you've again, that was a case of a player doing something that puts it in position to where there's doubt, not in your favor. The guy was crashing the net and probably would have stopped before hitting Karpovich, getting into the crease at all. And Brent Regner, who was the defenseman who got sent down by Peoria, who's no longer here now because he's been called back up, he hit their player as he was approaching the goal. Well, the guy, there was talk, well, he tried to hit him away from the crease. Well, if you don't hit him at all, it doesn't, you know, you're not trying to take physics into account. And he piled over Karpovich and was behind him, and then the goal scored, and it's a big kerfluffle. And, you know, if you don't hit him in the first place, there's no question. Either Karpovich can get to the puck and make the save, or the guy is in the way, and there's no, well, was he hit into the crease? And that's the kind of thing, it's just another in a long list of things where the team is doing things that don't necessarily bode well going forward, because you can't do that stuff, and that's why we're having so many discipline problems and so many, seems like we're shorthanded more than other teams.
Lastly on our list before we get to Shockers hockey rock song of the week, courier and press coverage. Not a big deal to me because I go to IcemanManiacs.com for all of my Iceman information. But Saturday night home game, no coverage.
Yeah.
And you just wonder why. And on top of it, the Iceman write up a report and send it to the newspaper on top of it. So they don't even have to send a reporter. They can just copy and paste or edit and paste and put it up.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I've been one of the few who've been defending the Courier a lot this season because a lot of our home games have been on Fridays, and I understand they have limited staff, and when you're up against high school football on Fridays, whether we like it or not, we're not going to win that battle. High school football is going to get the coverage, and we get the scraps of whatever space is left.
Even on 96.9 The Wire. I haven't come to any of the games because I've been doing high school football.
But Saturday, you felt like, okay, it's a Saturday, high school football's winding down, we should actually have someone there. And it turned out we didn't. And the only mention of the game was in the briefs of the sports section. And my first thought when I got to the game and went up to the press box and saw there was no one there from the Courier was, well, what's going on? Is there a Tiddlywinks competition in Poseyville tonight that they've got to cover? You know, something really important. But I didn't want to just be that cynical. I wanted to actually look at the paper the next day, see what got space, see what got words, and see what got the bylines. And we've heard over and over again from the Courier they have 5 sports staffers. Okay, well, one of them has to be at the office, and the other 4 can go out and cover stuff. Well, they had one at the USI basketball game, one at the UE basketball game, which was on the road.
Yeah, Notre Dame.
Yeah, they sent someone to Notre Dame to cover that, and then they had someone covering the Rights football game and someone covering the Modern Day football game. So that's the 4 that are traveling. The 5th person who was at the desk was Randy Beard, the sports editor. And his job, apparently, that day was to cover the IU football game. So that, to me, was the weakest link. You know, we've talked about with the Iceman roster, if you're going to take someone out, or if you want to put someone in, you got to take someone out. Well, the same thing kind of applies to the Courier and Press. If you want Iceman coverage, then what are you not going to cover instead? And I think the weak link on Saturday was the IU football game. They're terrible. They got beat like 62-14 or something. And they're not even the local team, quote unquote. I understand you have to send someone to the high school games and you have to send someone to the USI and UE games because if you don't, there may not be Associated Press coverage available for those games. And if you want to cover them, you got to cover them yourselves. But IU football is going to have an AP story. You can cover that via the AP. You don't have to have someone locally here writing about it. And I think that's where the frustrating thing was, that even if you couldn't send one to the game, at least have someone on the staff put together a quote-unquote staff report and cover the game beyond just 3 sentences in briefs.
Well, and I have a harder problem with it because you and I have both done it. We've had to train the Courier Press about hockey.
Yeah.
They come up there and they sit up there because they're going to write a paper and they don't understand the game.
Yeah.
And how can you not, you know, whether they, you know, there are other people that know hockey that can write in this town. And, you know, why don't you do a consultant fee or something to actually have hockey coverage for your minor pro AA team that's playing out of the Ford Center? That's the biggest thing in the Ford Center.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that's been discussed, and Randy Beard, to his credit, has said on record that he's been wanting to add a full-time beat writer that would cover the Icemen during the winter and the Otters during the summer, because the Otters are in the same boat we're in, that they don't actually have a dedicated beat writer. Half the time, they don't have anyone at their games, and they'll just get a little blurb in the briefs, too. And I know Randy said he wants to get a full-time beat writer that would cover both. The schedules don't overlap, so it would be perfect. But in this day and age,
everything's online, right. Newspapers are struggling. I can understand that.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, I understand that people are frustrated and want the coverage, but I also understand the courier side to an extent, that there's just limitations within the industry at this point, and there's not an endless budget where you can just add more and more people just to cover everything you want to cover. But like on Saturday, there are cases like Saturday where you look at it and go, you know, there's something that you covered locally that you could have gotten coverage from elsewhere, that you probably should have had someone, even if not in the building, at least someone should have called coach, got a couple quotes at the end of the game, and put together a full story for it. Even if it's buried on page 4, that's better than the first item in briefs where half the people probably don't even notice that it's there.
Not to mention, sometimes I feel like we need to celebrate every win this team gets.
yeah, very much so. Let's put it on the front page. Forget the sports section. Put it on the front page of the paper.
And now, for your listening pleasure, 96.9 FM, The Wire presents Shockers Hockey Rock Song of the Week.
This week's Rock Song of the Week, this is a good old-fashioned sing-along song. And it cracks me up every time it's played at an Iceman game and cuts off. Sometimes you'll hear people continue singing even after the music has stopped. This is one, when we were at Swander, I would play this late in the game if we were behind by a goal, needing some momentum. And they still play it every now and then at the games. And I guess this goes out to two groups of people. One, the Iceman bandwagon jumpers who are falling off the bandwagon in droves. And I don't say that aimed at people that are criticizing the team, because that doesn't necessarily mean you're a bandwagon jumper. It's the people that actually go on Facebook and say things like, well, if they don't win this next game, I'm not coming anymore. That's a bandwagon jumper. Yep. So this song is for you, bandwagon jumpers. And this is also for the 8,000 or 9,000 people who had tickets to the Journey concert that was postponed and are wanting their fix of Journey. This is Don't Stop Believin' by Journey.
Yeah.
And we are back here on Iceman Insights with Michael Shockley and the Dirty D. And we want to talk a little bit. We got bad news, folks. We've had another, I almost want to say death in the family. We've had another another player reclaimed by the parent club.
Yeah. Well, we actually had two. One of them came down and went back up so fast that you might make your head spin. Brent Regner came down from the Blues and Rivermen last week on the 6th, and then he got called back up on the 10th. And he may come back down soon. We may have some more reinforcements return from Peoria soon. They've been really hit hard by injuries. They had five different guys miss games over the weekend due to injury. So you figure at least a couple of those will probably come back. And when those guys come back from injury, they may be able to send a couple guys back down, because they've emptied the barrel. Everyone that they sent down except Paul Karpowicz has been called back up. So you think in time, hopefully, we'll get a couple of those guys back, and that'll help. But the other transaction was Will Weber, the big defenseman that was sent down by Columbus and Springfield. He's been called up because the Falcons had a defenseman break his hand, and he's supposed to miss 6 to 10 weeks. So I would guess Weber will be up for a while now, unless they don't like what they see out of him and send him back down and call Medeski up, or Blomqvist. Medeski and Blomqvist are both
my favorites.
Blue Jackets property, too. So, yeah, I would really not want to see Medeski get called up, because I think he's the real deal. But
well, I like Medeski a lot. The one problem I see is his skating, and that might keep him out of the A for a while. But hopefully, but that's something that, you know, Crom's going to fix that over the next 6 weeks to 10 weeks. So I can see, you know, Medeski probably won't be here next year, but he does. I mean, he's got the big league shot and everything else. But if you see him trying to keep up with the play back to the defensive zone, he's a big guy. Sometimes those big guys have a harder time with their stride.
Yeah, but I think, like you said, that can be fixed, and that's
that's what Crom's job is to do.
Right. Yeah. When you have that much offensive talent on the blue line and that sense as the quarterback on the power play, you won't stay at this level for that long. You may be here for a year or two to fine tune things and improve your skating and improve your conditioning a little bit, but that's that kind of talent doesn't stay at this level for long.
And then Will Weber just called up, and we talked a couple weeks ago about, I felt we had too many, not that we had too many, but we're blessed with puck moving defensemen, but we didn't have a lot of solid, just defensive defensemen. And he was a defensive defenseman, and now he's gone.
Yeah, that's a bit of a blow, not only defensively as far as defensive skill, but also size. He's a big guy, and he would occasionally take an unwelcome penalty, but he also could dish out some big hits that would keep guys honest down in the defensive zone, and that's the kind of presence you're going to miss.
Do you want to talk a little bit about chemistry? And I wonder, too, you know, the Will Weber thing just came out, and I saw it in Facebook's like, oh, no. And if the fan base is rocked with a player getting called up and leaving, much like Brett Sonne when he got called up a month ago, how drastic is that effect in the locker room? You know, how are guys, you know, what's Medeski like losing his defense partner? What is, you know, Madore and Karpowicz's feelings when one of their solid defensemen get pulled away? What do wingers think when there's, you know, Brett Sonne was tearing it up in this league and he gets called up, and how many games does it take to relearn that position with someone new in it?
Yeah, and that's the revolving door that's kind of been between here and Peoria especially, but now we've seen a move as well with Columbus and Springfield. That goes a long way toward not really destroying the chemistry, but it doesn't take that much to be off a little bit.
It sets it back.
Yeah, and that kind of movement can really show up on the ice in being the difference between winning a one-goal game and losing a one-goal game. And it's proof in the numbers. I looked it up based on the number of transactions initiated by affiliate teams this year. The Icemen have already had 10 transactions in a month that were initiated by the parent clubs. That's the most in the league. We've had 10. The league average is 2.9. And not surprisingly, that's hurt our chemistry to the point where we're last in the league. Now, granted, there are other problems on this team, but chemistry goes a long way. And it's not just the Icemen that are struggling with it. You look at other teams. Wheeling has had the second most, 9, and they are in last place in their division. The most extreme example to me, though, is the Trenton Titans. They started the season 4-1-0, and through October 25th, when they were 4-1-0, they had no transactions initiated by their affiliates. Since October 25th, they've had 7 transactions. And you know what their record's been since then? 1-5-1. And that's proof that you can have a team that's riding high, playing well, and you make a few changes, and it completely screws things up. And on the flip side, the Gwinnett Gladiators have had only one transaction all season that was initiated by their affiliates, and they're the best in the league. They've got 23 points, which is by far the most in the league right now. So I think there's some proof in the pudding that when you have a revolving door and guys coming in and out, if it takes a couple games to get things back kind of in sync when a change is made, well, you look at that on the grand scheme and go, oh, well, it's only a couple of games. You know, they'll be all right after a couple of games. But the problem is you make one change, you take a couple of games to get used to it, and then another change is made. And then it takes a couple of games to get used to that. And you need to be clicking on all cylinders in order to win games in a competitive league like this. And when there's just a constant stream of guys coming and going, that really goes a long way to screw things up just enough to where instead of winning 4-3, you're losing 4-3.
And we talked about this at the beginning of the season, the fact that we only brought back 4 players from last year's team, or 5. And so the whole chemistry was thrown off in training camp. This team showed up the second week of training camp, right before that Friday night game. Guys were still coming in. So that chemistry was a big issue. Now we look at Fort Wayne. They put their team together 2 weeks before training camp, and they're just chugging along. And there's, you know, we played Gwinnett. They weren't that much faster than us, but you could see the system in place. Mm-hmm. And all 3 lines are working the system. And when you're going up against a team with a system and you're still in the installation process for yourself, it's hard to win a game.
Right. And I think that is a beautiful segue. Wonderfully done, Mr. Professional Radio Broadcaster.
That's what I do.
Beautiful segue to our next topic. We actually got some feedback on Facebook after last week's show. We talked a little bit about Rich Crum's system and the way it's taking time to develop, and the torpedo pass where you send the guy to the far blue line and try to get the stretch pass to him and generate chances offensively that way. And one of our loyal listeners, Aaron Miller, put in a request on Facebook that he wanted to hear Mr. Benigni explain a little more about Crum's system, and in particular the dump and chase element of it, and when that works, why it works, and what the Icemen are not doing, perhaps, in order to make it work.
Well, I will talk as much as I can. The first thing we have to realize is that Rich Crum is so far above hockey knowledge than anyone else in this town. It's sickening. I've gone out with Coach. I've taken him out to lunch, and I said, I'll buy you lunch. You talk hockey with me. And we had a hard time even finding a common ground to understand the game. He is that far above. I go back to when he was first hired 3 years ago, our first year in the CHL. I asked him at the press conference what was his style, and he said he likes the Red Wings style of puck possession. And what that means is you want to control the puck for as long as possible. And how that works out in a game is as your forwards are heading up in between the blue lines, if there are defensemen in their way, they will stop and redirect the puck back to their own defensemen and move it around the rink. So instead of dumping the puck into the corner and trying to have a race there, you actually spend more time in the neutral zone or your defensive zone passing the puck until you can gain the zone, the offensive zone, with a player carrying the puck over the line.
And ahead of steam.
Yes. And so what you have to do is you have to move that puck back and forth and laterally so that you get the defensive team onto one side of the ice so that you can have a forward that has enough room that he can enter the zone with speed across the blue line without any chance of that puck being taken away.
Yeah, and we see that a lot, actually.
Yes,
with Crum's
it's
system,
coming.
Where you'll have the center and, say, the right wing will both float over toward the right boards. They'll get the puck back to the right defenseman. The left wing will go to the far board on the left side and camp out right at the blue line. And then the defenseman will try to make that diagonal pass across the neutral zone to the winger, and the winger will then go into the zone usually one-on-one and try to make something happen. If something can't happen, if he can't get cut into the slot, then sometimes he'll do that wrap around the boards to where you have two forwards then on the other side of the ice to fight for the puck over there.
Now, even just because this is a system, that doesn't mean you don't ever dump and chase. There's so many times when a winger is coming up the boards and he can't go backwards and he can't make a pass at the blue line because you don't want to get your guys off sides. So it just, no matter how good of a team you are, the Detroit Red Wings are one of the best at it when they were at their best 8 years ago, but you still got to dump the puck into the corner because you can't have people offsides all the time. So no matter what your system is, you're still going to see a dump and chase. For myself, I actually like the dump and chase better, and part of that is because I've always played defense. And the hardest thing in the world for a defenseman is to be skating backwards, watching a forward, and then he plays the puck in behind you. And he's going forward with speed, and now you have to pivot. You have to turn your back to your opponent. You have to get the puck. You have to make a pass now. You have to clear it out of your zone with your back to the ice, not knowing where your teammates are, and waiting for that forward to crush you into the boards.
Yeah.
And so I actually am a proponent of the dump and chase. Crom likes puck possession. And again, you know, we had a great team last year. We had Todd Robinson at center. He's not the fastest guy in the world. He has great hands. He's puck possession. Our second line, we had Nicholas Lindberg. Wait, is that his name?
Yeah.
Yes. I always want to call him Zetterberg.
Boy, Jennifer Watts would be so disappointed.
No, I always get Lindberg mixed up with Zetterberg. But we had Nicholas Lindberg, not the fastest skater in the world.
He's not the fastest one.
No, he wasn't fattest either. But not the fastest skater in the world. Great hands. So we had two lines playing the exact same system with the exact same personnel. You had a puck distributing center who had great vision, and you had very fast wingers.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have that this year. This isn't the makeup of the team. So it's all being trained and taught how to play this system.
Yeah, and that just the speed of your wingers goes a long way toward whether or not dump and chase will work. Because yes, it's a challenge for the defenseman to turn around, go get the puck, and make a play before they get drilled. But you still put extra pressure on that defenseman if you have a winger who that defenseman knows is really fast, because then there's going to be that extra sense of urgency. And it just, whether you're there to actually make the play or not, if they know you have the speed to get there and make the play, they're going to have that extra sense of urgency to where they may do something that they may not otherwise do.
Yep.
And that's a big part of hockey, is forcing the opponent to do what you want them to do, not letting them do what they want to do.
Very true. You want to talk about stop and smell the roses?
Yeah, this is not to get too poetic on you, but I think the way this season has started, people have gotten really down. There's been a lot of negativity, and I think people still...
A lot of emotionalism.
Yeah, yeah. I think people still need to pause at times and just remember that this is entertainment. This is supposed to be fun. The players are out there, you know, they're doing a job, but they're trying to win. It's not like they're just trying to lose to tick everyone off. So there is still fun to be had. And even if the team is losing, there are little moments here and there that I think people need to enjoy and appreciate when they happen. Like last Tuesday at Education Day, the end of the first period, you've got 7,000 kids in the building. And with about 7 or 8 seconds left, all the kids started counting down the final seconds of the period. Well, as kids are wont to do, they started counting too fast. So they got all the way to zero, and there's still like 2.5 seconds left on the clock. But the funny thing about that was, when the kids got to zero, the horn hadn't sounded yet, there's still 2 seconds on the clock, all the players stopped. And it's just little things like that that I see over the course of a game, little organic things. You can't plan to stuff like that. Yep. But when something like that happens, grand scheme of things, it doesn't mean anything compared to the fact that the team's losing another game. But still, take little things out of the game and enjoy it for what it is. There's little fun, goofy stuff like that that happens over the course of a season that can create a little memory. And I thought it was funny when it happened. And something else funny happened the day after that, the Wednesday game against Greenville. During the course of play, we're in our defensive zone. Todd Robinson drops his glove. So his glove's sitting in the middle of the faceoff circle. Play continues, and probably 30 seconds later, there was a stoppage. So Todd starts to skate over to pick his glove up. But before he can get it, one of the linesmen picks it up for him, thinking that whoever dropped this glove has already gone to the bench. So the linesman picks up the glove, starts to skate over to the bench, gets halfway to the bench. Todd gets down to the corner where his glove was. It's like, where's my glove? And he looks over and sees the linesman skating away with it. So Todd yells at the linesman. The linesman turns around, and Todd just throws his hands up like, come on, man. Give me my glove. And it's just, yeah, we lost the game. But little things like that, I get a kick out of. There's a lot of stuff like that that happens over the course of the season that whether you're losing or winning, you still need to appreciate goofy little stuff like that that happens that should put a smile on your face. Maybe it's just a silver lining on a really large, ugly cloud, but I enjoy things like that, and I hope that people don't lose sight of things like that, that the game is supposed to be entertaining. It's supposed to be fun, and I think that's part of why, especially in the minor leagues, but even in the major leagues at this point, you see so much in the way of promotions and the music and things that happen off the ice, things that happen in intermissions and whistles, to make it an entertainment event where that you go for the game, but there's so much periphery stuff that happens that makes it more than just a game so that you get a bang for your buck. But the game can offer little things like that in the scope of the game too, that that I think people need to respect and appreciate. And it's, even if the team's losing, there's nothing wrong with something like that happening and smiling at it.
One of the other things that we talked about last week that you wanted me to bring up on the air was this team is a very professional team, and I've gotten that from sources that this team, even on off days, they are sending 13, 14 guys are coming in to work out at the Ford Center. So Crom has given them the day off. It happened a few weeks ago when we had the four games in 5 days. So Crom, after playing Wednesday night, what was it? Was it Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
I think it was... No, it was Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, with a trip to Kalamazoo and back to play a 5 o'clock Sunday game. Crom gave everyone Monday off. 13 of the guys came in to work out. So these guys are dedicated. I know Ben Dickinson of Dickinson Family Chiropractic, who is the chiropractor for the team. He says this team, every guy on the team, he's blown away with how professional they are. That they want anything that you can do for them, therapy-wise, Gatorade-wise, workout-wise. These guys are looking for any competitive advantage that they can get, and they're implementing it. And yeah. So this team is working as hard as it possibly can.
Yeah.
That starts with the coach and the captain and goes down from there.
And I think people, I don't know if it's trying to assign blame or just trying to make themselves feel better or what, but some people, not all, seem to have this thought that this team doesn't care that they're losing, that, you know, they lose a game, they put on their clothes and go home and, oh, well, we lost. That couldn't be farther from the truth. When I go into the locker room to deliver paperwork to Crom after games, if we lost, it's like a morgue in there. That nobody's talking, everybody's upset, you see heads down, but even despite the fact that they're all upset and not happy with the fact that they lost, they're still working. I'll go in there 20 minutes after the game's over, and there's guys still riding stationary bikes. There's guys still stretching. There's guys doing calisthenics in the corner of the room. And then there's usually two or three on the trainer's table getting worked out and having muscles rubbed and things like that. But it's not like they lose a game, they shower, they change their clothes, they go home, and everything's all hunky-dory. That couldn't be farther from the truth. These guys are very serious about this. No one wants to be there to lose games. And I know they do not take it lightly that they're losing, and there's not a man in that locker room that doesn't want to be 9-3-1 instead of 3-9-1 or whatever we are.
And maybe we have a little bit of a different perspective. We need to share this as well. When you walk into the locker room, the standings are up on a marker board, and it's changed every day. And so when you come into – last year we came into the locker room and Evansville was right up at top with Fort Wayne all year long. And all the information is right there for the players. And this year they're at the bottom of the pile. And, yeah. And it is updated every day. So every day these guys come into work, they see that they are in last place in their division.
Yeah, and it's sorted by the conference. So the entire Eastern Conference is there. There's 14 teams. So when you walk into that room, when you look at that board and you see 14 – Evansville. That's a slap in the face of a reminder that, yes, I need to go out there and win because we don't want to be that last team on the board anymore.
I saw also they added a new thing where they've got all the players up on the wall with their profile picture.
Yeah.
And I figured because we've had so much transaction, that's so that the guys can call each other by name. The little face recognition for your line mates.
Maybe they should have "Hi, my name is" stickers on their chest in every game.
We have a game at home this Sunday against Reading. And you really, 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 really need to think about coming out to this game because we are on the road for a lot of games for a long time after this Sunday.
Yeah. Yeah, we play Reading at 5 o'clock on Sunday, and then the Shrine Circus takes over the Ford Center. So the Icemen have a 5-game road trip, which is the longest of the season. And this is the last home game of November. There's not another home game till December 1st. So it's going to be a long layoff. It's a 5 o'clock game on Sunday. You play Reading, which is a team we don't see that often, so it's kind of a unique opportunity from that. It's also Subway Family Night, so you can get a ticket, a soda, a popcorn, and a t-shirt for $12, which is a great deal. And it's Youth Jersey Giveaway Night, the first of two this season, where the first 1,000 kids through the doors, and I'm not sure what the cutoff is, I think 12 years old or so, first 1,000 kids through the doors get an Iceman Youth Jersey for free. And they did that last year a couple times, and they're cool little jerseys. It's not like they're cheap little knockoffs. You know, they have a couple sponsor names on them and whatnot, but they're really nice jerseys. And it was cool last year after they did the first youth jersey giveaway. You came to the game, the next game after that, and you saw kids running around wearing them all over the place. And they're going to do that twice again this year. I don't know what they're going to look like, but I'm sure they'll be cool like they were last year. So that's a great opportunity.
There's also one other major moment on Sunday night that you forgot about. Matt Spaeth.
Man crush!
The linesman makes his victorious return once again. Matt Spaeth, as a linesman, two of our three wins this year, and our only two home wins, he's been on the ice dropping the puck. Coincidence?
Are they paying him under the table? Is there something going on here?
Shh, this is recorded.
Oh!
We're not going to end up in the clinker for this.
We're not allowed to talk about that? Okay, well, I guess I'll... So, Sunday against Reading, we've got... it's also... Reading is a team, on a serious note, that's a team that can give us pause in that just because you start slow doesn't mean your season is lost. Reading actually started 1-5-1 this season, and right now they're riding a 6-game winning streak and they're in first place in their division. So that's proof that you can... It's still early enough. You can still overcome a slow start and right the ship and get things going. So...
Well, I'm glad you still have hope because mine's. We have Cincinnati this Thursday. We have Fort Wayne on Saturday. Then the home game at Reading, and then the 5-game road trip. So 7 of our next 8 games on the road. And who knows? Maybe this is the chemistry break that they need. But boy, it's going to be tough to get wins over the next 3 weeks.
There's some tough opponents, but I do think this is. It's definitely high time for us to have a road trip because. That was something that was nice last year with the Ford Center not being ready right at the start of the season. The team was forced to start on the road. But early in the season, when you've got a bunch of guys that have come together from all different directions, that's exactly what you need. You need to have a few road games in a row where guys are on the bus and in the hotel and just hanging out and getting to know each other and some of that off-ice camaraderie stuff that goes a long way to building on-ice success. And while it's nice to have a lot of home games out of the gate for the fans... It's not as good for the team, and I think hopefully this road trip might come at the right time. We've got the win over South Carolina. Maybe you win one of the three this weekend at least, and then you go on the road trip, and maybe that's where you build some chemistry, and hopefully the revolving door will stop spinning so fast, and we can have the same group of guys for the entire road trip. This way there's no coming and going, and guys may get a little more used to each other and maybe put together a couple wins on the road trip and come back with some momentum.
His name is Michael Shockley. He is the senior writer and webmaster of IcemanManiacs.com, your best one and only source for all things hockey information and Iceman in Evansville. You got any last words?
Yeah, on Saturday, the Iceman going up to play Fort Wayne, there's a group of Iceman fans that are going up for that game, so... just want to tell everyone drive safely, cheer the team on. Hopefully you'll help us bring back a win. And on the Fort Wayne note, one final thing, I just wanted to say how cool it was to hear Mike Emmerich from NBC calling the Iceman Comets game over the weekend. He grew up near Fort Wayne and got into broadcasting because he listened to Bob Chase umpteen years ago calling calling Comets games.
He's awesome.
And Emmerich actually called play-by-play for the second period of that game, and it was wonderful. The Icemen didn't score. I was hoping they would score so I could hear Mike Emmerich call an Icemen goal. But it was really cool. And when you hear a guy like that that's that smooth and that professional coming in calling radio, which is harder than TV because you actually have to describe where things are and what's happening. When he transitions from TV to radio, doing a minor league game for two teams he doesn't know, and he's clearly prepared enough to just take it on, it's like riding a bike. And that man is an incredible talent, and it was very cool. Even if it was only one period of him actually calling play-by-play, it was really cool. He's no Derek Benigni.
Yeah.
But
Derek Benigni stole a lot of stuff from Mike Emmerich.
But it was really cool. And when you hear him, and then you hear two periods of Bob Chase calling the action at 117 years old, you understand just how good Emmerich is. Because Chase, while he's a legend, he's not what he once was. And it's kind of painful to listen to a guy that's that old that has that much trouble keeping up with the action. And, you know, half the time he's not mentioning the players by name, and he's saying he's going over there without actually saying where there is, which doesn't do you any good on the radio. And I also thought it was funny when there was a point where Todd Robinson was playing the puck, and Chase actually called him old, which is like Lindsay Lohan calling someone a screw-up. But I thought that was interesting. But Bob Chase aside, and due respect to the man, he's been in this game forever. He's done
great good. He's good. And yeah. He loves Ron Gary. He always talks good about Ron Gary on the radio. He talks about the Iceman organization. The only thing I've ever heard him say negative about the Iceman organization is the Ford Center Jumbotron clock. He says it is the biggest, nicest Jumbotron he's ever seen. That is the hardest to read the actual hockey information.
Well,
because the penalties are so small.
That's true. The penalties
board.
Are pretty small. But when you're 117 years old, you've got problems seeing anything. But he's done that for 60 years, and I can't imagine doing anything for 60 years. So all respect to him. Both Emmerich and Chase are winners of the Lester Patrick Trophy for service and dedication to the sport. And there was a lot of talent and a lot of hockey history in that press box on Friday. So it was pretty cool to listen to.
Is there anyone else we need to throw under the bus before this broadcast is over? Because we've clobbered just about everybody.
I don't know. Let me think. No, I think we can save it for next week. We got to end this show at some point before we get into prime time.
No doubt. He is Michael Shockley. This is Dirty D, and you have been listening to Iceman Insights on 96.9 The Wire.
See you next week.
The puck is in. The home team wins the good old hockey game.